Welcome, everyone. Welcome to Daf Yomi Masechet Shabbat, 1 week at a time. And this is actually our 11th lesson. So, kol hakavod to everyone who has been with us from the beginning, and welcome to anybody who is joining for the first time tonight or today. For Masechet Shabbat, as those of you who are doing the Daf day by day, it is, I would say, a more technical or technically more difficult masechet or tractate, in the sense that there are a lot of concepts that come up as we learn the daf. So what I think I'm going to try to do as we learn together, a little bit differently than what we did in our previous lessons in Masechet Brachot, which were more about stories and different good advice and different halachot or laws of prayer. Here, when we talk about Shabbat, there are a lot of concepts that are going to come up. So what I'm going to try to do every week is go through the concepts that were brought up in the week's daf and try to discuss them a little bit deeper and just give us more of an understanding of I would say, on one hand, the concepts that we're talking about, and on the other hand, give us an idea of what either daily life looked like in the time of the Mishnah or the Talmud, or what I would say even architecturally, what things looked like. So I actually made a list for us of different topics or different statements that were made in the Gemara for this past week. And I'd like to go through each one and just try to understand what each concept or each halachic line means or opinion means. For those of you who are doing the daf, this could be a very good review for you. See if you know what these concepts are. And as I said, as we go through, we will discuss, as I mentioned, the different architectures or different daily activities that are happening in the time of the Talmud. So on Daf, last week I gave you an introduction and we did the first Daf, Daf Bet, number 2. And we discussed the 4 different domains. Again, Reshut HaRabim, the public domain, Reshut HaYachid, the private domain, and then 2 more domains, one called Karmelit, which is something in between the private and the public domain. We'll talk a little bit more about that this week, and as we continue, we'll talk more and more. And the 4th one is called Mekom Ptor, which means a place where you're exempt because it is less than a regular domain, meaning it's a smaller size and doesn't really count as a domain. So that's just a review from last week. Starting this week on Daf Gimel, we were talking about, on Daf Bet, last week we talked about what does it mean to carry, and I mentioned then that to carry means to lift something up, take it somewhere else, and put it down. And we mentioned the words Akira. Akira means to lift something up or remove it from the domain that it's in, or from the ground, or from whatever it was resting on. Moving it to another place, hotza'ah, and then hanacha, putting it down. So those are very important classifications or categories in terms of the action of moving or carrying. On Daf Gimel, we had a question in the Gemara that said, what if a person put a backpack on another person, right? Not on himself, but on another person, and then that person walked out into a different domain. Again, the idea here is that the original person, he didn't do the akira. He didn't, you know, lift the item. It was lifted and put upon him. And the Gemara mentions this idea of akira begufo ka akirat chefetz mimkomo, when his body is doing the lifting, that is as if he has lifted it out into another domain. And the Gemara makes a distinction between his body, gufo, his body, and his yad, his hand. And the Gemara explains that his body is actually resting on the ground. So as soon as he has that backpack and walks out and stops, we'll talk about stopping in a little bit, that is as if he lifted the object, moved it, and then put it down. So the Gemara says that if that does happen, that is considered moving the object. The Gemara on Daf Gimel also talks about the hand, as I mentioned. What is the hand? Meaning, on one hand, that was funny, sorry. On one hand, your hand is part of your body. On the other hand, again, sorry. On the other hand, it's not large enough. It's not a domain in and of itself. And the Gemara on Daf Gimel calls the hand a karmelit. Again, as I explained before, karmelit is something that's in between a private domain, reshut hayachid, and a public domain, reshut harabim. Okay, the next daf dalid 4, discusses this idea of throwing. What happens if you throw an object from one domain to another? And it even gets more interesting when the case on daf dalid on 4 is, what happens if I have a private domain and then I want to throw it to another private domain? There's no issue of carrying within a private domain, but what if there's a public domain in between, right? What if there's a public domain in between these two private domains, and can I throw it through that public domain? And on Daf Dalet, we have the concept of kluta kimi shehuncha damya. If I throw something through another domain, it's as if it came to rest in that domain. Again, kluta kimi, if something goes through a domain, kimi shehuncha, it's as if it rested in that domain. Again, even though it just is flying through the air, it's as if it rested, and therefore you did carry from a private domain through into a public domain, and then from a public to a private again. So that is an issue. Chachamim actually say that this is not an issue. Again, we're going to see in the Gemara that there will be many different opinions. So on Daf Dalet, we have this idea of kluta, but the Chachamim, the sages, say we don't hold by this concept, and therefore, if you do throw through, it's not necessarily as if it went through that public domain. Rebbe actually talks about something a little bit different, and talks about, what if I'm going from a public domain to a public domain, but through a private domain? So, you know, think about a house that sits between two streets, and you throw a ball that goes from one street to the other, but through the windows of the house. So one could think that we're talking about kluta kimi shehuncha damya, which I mentioned before. Again, that if it goes through a domain, it's as if it rested. Rebbe gives us another concept, and this is beta keman demalia damya. Rebbe says, if you're going through a house, and that house has a roof, as most houses do, then that roof will create this domain that is enclosed. And Rebbe says that an enclosed domain, again, a private domain that has a roof on it, it's as if it's filled up with things. And when that ball is being thrown through it, it's as if it rested on something in the house, even though it didn't really. So even though the concept sounds very similar to the concept we just had before, it's a little bit different, because it's saying not that it rested because it went through a different domain, but because it has a roof, it creates almost this space that is filled with stuff, even though it's really airspace. And therefore, if something is thrown through, it's as if it rested or came to rest in that area. Okay, since we were talking about throwing, Daf-Hei 5 continues with this idea. Again, till now we were talking about one person carrying an object. What happens when an object is thrown and then another person catches it? So is it that I've picked up an object, I've thrown it, so now I've moved it from one domain to another, and then when it lands, that's as if I put it down. So that is the first line here. Amad bimakomo, the person who is catching, he stands in his place, vikibel, and he catches the item. Chayav, meaning the person who threw it becomes, has violated Shabbat, meaning he's the one who violated Shabbat, he's the one who threw it, even though he didn't catch it himself, somebody else did, but it kind of comes into the other person's hand because he threw it. However, the Gemara says on Daf Hei, on 5, Akar mimkomo vikibel, what happens if you throw something from one domain to the other, and the person who's standing in the second domain runs to catch that item, because that person number two, the catcher, ran to get that item, he becomes part of the movement of this item, and therefore patur, the person who threw it in the first place is exempt. Again, just to remind you, I mentioned last week, when the Gemara in Masechet Shabbat says patur, exempt, it does not mean exempt from all punishment and therefore it is permissible. It's important to remember that patur, exempt here, means exempt from a biblical obligation or transgression, but it is still asur. It is still not permitted, and therefore you are still not allowed to do it. And rabbinically, it is prohibited. So we should just realize that there is a difference. Okay, an important concept that I would like to mention is the concept of teku. We are encountering the first teku of Masechet Shabbat, of the Tractate of Shabbat, on Daf Hei 5. And it's really important to understand this concept. And I would like to say that those of you who are just beginning to study the Talmud, it could be a very frustrating concept. The word teku in Aramaic actually means let it stand. It's generally preceded by either at least one, if not a series of questions, and you're always waiting with bated breath to see what the answer is. Unfortunately, teku means we don't have the answer. We let the question stand. We don't know what the answer is. And I think it's there for a number of reasons. So number one, I think it's really a lesson for all of us that we don't have all the answers, especially those of us who are parents and our children ask multiple questions. Sometimes we have the answers and sometimes we don't. And I think that Gemara is trying to teach us that although this is a very, it is the foundation of many practical guidelines and practical laws, it is also not necessarily a practical source. And we have to realize that sometimes we don't have the answers, and even the Talmud doesn't have the answers. There are those who say that teku stands for, what I wrote here, tishbi yitaretz, kushiyot veba'ayot. Tishbi is a name or it is a nickname for Eliyahu Hanavi. We say Eliyahu HaTishbi, Eliyahu, Elijah the prophet. We say that in the when the Messiah comes, Elijah, Eliyahu the prophet is going to come, and he will yitaret, he will give us the answers to all of our questions, to kushiyot veba'ayot, to the questions that we have. There are those who say that he will answer the tekus. There are those who also say that he will not answer whenever it says teku, but he will answer when it says kashya. So I will try to bring up the next time it says kashya, so you see what that means. Kashya means like it's a good question, and again, we don't have the answer. So again, tiku is an important concept. It will be coming up a lot in this masechet, and it comes up the first time here in daf hey. Okay. Another concept which I don't want to say is frustrating, but is one opinion. It is a minority opinion, not the majority opinion. But as I mentioned, if we talk about taking something out or carrying on Shabbat, we said you need to pick it up, take it out, or move it to a different domain and put it down. The question is, what happens if you just keep walking and walking and walking? The rabbis will say that as long as you're walking, you have not transgressed. It is only when you stop, right? Stopping is as if you've put it down. There is, however, an opinion at the end of Daf Hey that says, Mehalech ke'omed, that even though you're walking, it's as if you're standing. Because what does he say? Every time I take a step, I'm kind of starting and stopping, starting and stopping. So therefore, I don't even need you to stop when you're walking. Every time you take a step, it's as if you've stopped. And therefore, you have transgressed the concept of carrying. So that is, I think, an important concept here. Dafvav, we have the concept of Tzidei Rishut Harabim. We're going to talk in a few minutes about what the streets look like in the time of the Mishnah or the Talmud, the Gemara. But Tzidei Rishut Harabim are what we would call the sides of the street. So you can either think of it as, let's say, the shoulder of a road. You could think of it almost as a gutter. The Gemara explains that this is not a place that people walked, right? Generally, we walk in the middle of the road. You don't walk on the sides. And therefore, the Tzidei Rishut HaRabim, the sides of Rishut HaRabim, it's not clear if they're counted as Rishut HaRabim, as the public domain, or are they something a little bit different because it's not a place where it's not, let's say, a public thoroughfare. So that's the discussion on Daf Vav. Just if those of you who want Daf Vav 6, again, it gives a very good introduction, and I actually taught it last week. I think it's really important to realize that, in general, when we start a new tractate, when we start a new masechet, it's very rare that you get fundamental concepts so early. We usually have to wait at least 50 pages in before we get fundamental concepts. So just realize in Shabbat we're very lucky that we're actually getting fundamental concepts within the first 6 pages. And we really have on Daf Vav a very nice summary of what the 4 domains are, what are the parameters. So again, I mentioned them last week in our shiur, and if you want, you can go back there, or again, look at Daf Vav. Another concept that comes up in Daf Vav is what's called Pasei Beraot. I think this is really an important concept. Again, trying to understand what life was like in the time of the Mishnah. We're talking about a time where people were going up to the temple Aliyah LaRegel. People would ascend to Jerusalem, to the temple, to either bring sacrifices, to celebrate the festivals. The idea was that people from all over the country were traveling to Jerusalem, and at that time they were trying to make it as easy as possible for these travelers. So what did they do? They actually created wells or cisterns along the road so that these travelers wouldn't have to veer off the road in order to stop and refresh for themselves, for their animals, and almost like a pit stop that we have on the road. A rest stop, a gas station, a supermarket, this idea that water was available to those who were traveling to Jerusalem. What happened if you got there and it was Shabbat? Again, they put these wells, a be'er in Hebrew. So they put the wells in the public thoroughfare. So again, we're in the public domain. But if you recall, if we dig a well and it is 10 cubits or 10 tfachim deep, it becomes its own domain. It becomes a reshut hayachid, a private domain. Now we have a problem, because if it's Shabbat and the water is in a private domain and you are standing in a public domain, you have a problem to get the water out of the well. So what did they want to do? They wanted to create an area around the well that will make the area, again, on street level as a private domain, just like the well. So you can stand there and then draw water out and drink from the well. So what they did was they would put these boards at right angles on the corners, on the four corners of the well, basically, or around the well. And these four kind of L-shaped brackets would create a reshut hayachid, a private domain. And this way, the people who are traveling, the pilgrims who are traveling to Jerusalem, would be able to draw water on Shabbat. So the Gemara talks about, Is this a reshut harabim? Is this a public thoroughfare? What happens if people are walking through it? Does it nullify it or not? So you can see Daf Vav or 6 for that discussion. Daf Zayin, we are going to talk about the concept of a karpef. A karpef was a large courtyard. And the Gemara explains that it was enclosed, but it wasn't enclosed as a residential area. It was actually just an open courtyard. The question is, again, as we mentioned, a private domain has a wall, as opposed to a public domain, which is where people walk through. But a private domain is generally some place that's residential, that people live, not, let's say, an open courtyard. So the Gemara discusses, even though it's very large, could this be a private domain, or is it a public domain because it's so large? And the bottom line there is that it is a private domain, but it, because it's so large and there's no one living in it, you are also not allowed to carry within it as well. So that was just an interesting discussion. I want to show you, as we're again, as I mentioned previously, this style adaf by Nathan Farber, beautiful graphics. I think they really help, especially in Shabbat, for us to visualize what things look like. So this is what I would say the streets or the marketplace looked like in the time of the Mishnah and the Talmud. Those of you who have been to Israel, these can be found in a number of places. So first of all, just an ancient archaeological site would be the Kardo in Jerusalem in the Old City. You can see where there's a public thoroughfare, meaning a street where people walked, and then pillars that lined the public thoroughfare. Those of you who have been to and have gone to the Shuk, the marketplace, Machane Yehuda. So you could think about what does the marketplace look like. On the inside would be like stores where they're actually like private domains. There are stores. Outside the stores are these benches or tables where the people would put out their wares. And then people would walk down the street here and then stop at the different stalls. So again, the middle of the street is obviously the public domain, the Reshut HaRabim. These stores that are inside are obviously Reshut HaYachid, a private domain. And our question is going to be the Itzdabot, which is or the stav, those are these benches or tables that were outside, because they're kind of in between the public domain and the private domain. So too, the Gemara discusses on Daf Zayin, on 7, what about this area in between the pillars, right? Meaning if there are pillars, people are not really walking through there. On the other hand, it's not indoors, so is it considered Is it considered the public area or the private area? And again, as you see on this slide, we have this idea of Carmelite. Again, Carmelite being something in between the private domain and the public domain. So I thought just this is a beautiful visualization of what the marketplace looked like. Back to our list, we have a few more concepts. The concept of an Eruv Tchunim. So just to understand, and we'll get more when we get to the tractate of Eruvin, but again, as we mentioned, you're not allowed to carry on Shabbat, but even if you're in a private domain, you're not allowed to carry outside of the city limits. The Gemara mentions that you have 2,000 amot, which is about 1,000 meter, oh, kilometer, right? So you have about a kilometer around the city that you're allowed to carry, but beyond that, you're not allowed to carry. The Gemara mentions this idea of an Eruv. An Eruv, we're familiar that an Eruv helps us carry within a city. It makes the area basically a private domain. We have shared responsibility, and therefore it's as if it's owned by only one person or shared ownership. An Eruv Tchumin is basically if I want to travel more than that kilometer outside of my city limits, I can put some food at the edge of let's say the city, and then that food, because I can eat it on Shabbat, that food now becomes my new residence, and then I get another 2,000 amot beyond that food, that eruv. So it gives me another 2,000 amot. The Gemara on Daf Chet on 8 discusses that the food needs to be in a place where I can eat it on Shabbat. But let's say you were in the middle of a public domain, but you put your food, let's say, in a ditch or in a hole that is a private domain. If you can't eat it or you can't get to it on Shabbat, it doesn't really become an Eruv. And we'll talk about that more as we learn more about Eruv later on in the future. Iskupa. Iskupa is, I think, a great word. It means threshold. Think about when, you know, many houses have, let's say, a porch area in front of their house. So you can think about on the outside of the house is a public domain. Again, the inside of the house is a private domain. The threshold or your porch, that's it's something in the middle. And the Gemara discusses that, again, if the door is open, that threshold becomes a private domain, meaning closer to like the inside of the house. When the door is closed, then it's more of a public domain. It's like the outside. Daftet 9 talks about the next following few concepts. These, of course, go back to Eruv in a different way. We want there to be a demarcation or a doorway when we get to an area, right, that will show us, right, think about a house. You want to be able to open up the door, and then you know that you're in a new area. So the Gemara discusses that sometimes, let's say you have an alleyway and it ends, right, or it starts, right, it comes off of a main road, and then there's an alleyway that leads somewhere else, you know, let's say to a courtyard where there are going to be houses. We want to have a demarcation at the beginning of the alley that shows you that we're starting a new area, that there's a differentiation between the public domain and this alleyway. So the Gemara talks about this concept of lechi. A lechi is a post. It is something that's put vertically along the wall at the edge of an alleyway, and that is basically a demarcation that is a wall or that we're going into a new domain. The other thing that you can do is something called a korah. A korah is, I would say, the opposite. Again, lechi is this vertical post that you put on the floor. A korah is a beam that is placed over the doorway or over the entranceway of the alley. And again, this idea is that it creates a separation between the alleyway and the public thoroughfare that's on the other side of the alley. Two more concepts. One is the concept of levud. Levud is where two objects are within three tefachim. Again, a tefach is a hand breadth. If something is within three hand breadths of the other thing, it's as if that space is filled in. So less than three is what we would call lavud, and lavud is this creation of one area. So I'll give you an example. On Daf Ted, it talks about two koraz, two beams that are placed within three tefachim of each other. It's as if, even though each beam is very thin, because they're so close to each other, it's as if they create an entire roof. And then what happens is our last concept for today. I hope it wasn't too much. Our last concept for today is pi tikra yored v'sotem, meaning if I have a roof, or again, that beam that is over the entranceway of the alley, the edge of the beam is seen as if it goes all the way down to the floor, right? Pi tikra, the edge of the roof, yored, goes down, this sotem, and closes up. And the concept here in the Gemara is that this korah, this beam, even though it's one piece of wood or whatever it is, one piece of material that's on top of a doorway, it's as if it comes all the way down and creates a wall, and therefore creating a private domain within that area. So again, the korah can do that, and we will see many other and many other examples for this, definitely in Eruvin, in the Tractate of Eruvin, which talks about how do we create an Eruv. This is also concept, and a number of these concepts like Levud are going to also be discussed when we get to the Tractate of Sukkah, right? The huts that we build on the holiday of Sukkot. A number of these concepts are going to come into play, especially when you have things, let's say, close to each other or close to the ground, and we will see these concepts again later on. So these were concepts that were in Daf 3 to 11, Gimel to Yud Aleph. And with that, I want to learn with you a little bit of yesterday's Daf in Daf 10 in Yud. I actually created this source sheet for you because I want to talk about Shabbat, but I would say more theologically or philosophically. I know that we just spent half an hour, I would say, in very technical topics, very conceptual ideas, and now I'd like to, those of you who are doing the daf, recognize that the past two dapim have been very brachot-like in the sense of bringing us back to Masechet Brachot and telling us a few stories, giving us some philosophy or good advice, and we're a little bit less technical. So I wanted to learn with you a little bit from Daf Yud, which was yesterday's Daf. I have it for you here in English and in Hebrew for those of you who want to see it. And I thought it was just a beautiful line. Also, those of you who are familiar, the psukim, the verses that are going to be quoted in this section, were actually from last week's Torah portion, from Parshat Shavua of last week. So I thought it was just very timely, and I wanted to learn this with you together. So here we go. The Amar Rava Bar Machasya. These are the Gemara on Daf 10 on Yud has a number of teachings from Rava Bar Machasya, and this one goes as follows: Amar Rav Chama Bar Gurya Amar Rav. So this is all in the name of Rav. Hanoten matana lechaveiro tzarich lehodio a beautiful idea that if you give a gift to your friend, to another person, you really should tell them that you are giving it to them. And how do we know that this is the case? Shana Emar, Ladat ki ani Hashem mekadishchem. God says that when he gives us the Shabbat, he says, you should just know that I'm the one who gave it to you, right? You should understand that I'm the one who gave you this sanctification, the Shabbat, which brings, I would say, holiness or sanctity into our lives. Tanya Nami Hachi, we also learned, Ladat ki ani Hashem mekadishchem. Amar lo hakadosh baruch hu Moshe. This is what God said to Moshe. Matana tova yeshli bebeit gnazi v'shabbat shma. Right, God says to Moses, I have this beautiful gift that I have hidden away in my, I would call it a safe, right? I hid it away in my treasury, and I want to give it to you. And this gift is called Shabbat. V'ani mevakesh litna l'Yisrael, and I want to give it to Bnei Israel, to the children of Israel. Lech v'hodiyam. Go and tell them that I'm giving them this gift. We're going to continue on giving a gift, and we'll come back to this concept in a minute. Basically, I'm not going to read it inside, actually. I'm going to paraphrase, but Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel says that if you give a child something, you know, a gift, you should make sure that you tell their mother that you gave them a gift. And he says, what should you do? You know, in those days, you can't really send a text message or call them. So you should, like, leave some crumbs on the child's face. So then the mother will see the crumbs, and she'll ask, what are these crumbs? And then the child says, oh, yeah, just realized that so-and-so gave me a donut or gave me something to eat. Okay, but now I want to get to the second part of this Gemara. The Gemara says, Ini. And that's meant to be read with question mark, exclamation point. Ini, is it true? Again, it's going back to our statement that you're supposed to tell somebody when you give them a gift. V'ha amar Rav Chama b'Rabbi Chanina, right? But didn't Rav Chama b'Rabbi Chanina say, Hanoten matana l'chaveiro en tzarich l'hodiyo, right? If you give a gift to your friend, you do not have to tell them that you gave them a gift. Okay, I'm just going to pause 1 second because Lynn is asking an excellent question. That right, she says, right, if we announce a gift, but we should hide charity. And that's an excellent point that I want to make. Here we're talking about a gift and not charity. Specifically, charity, we do want it to be hidden. We want it to be as anonymous as possible. Here we're talking about giving a gift and as opposed to charity. So I think the idea is when we do something nice for somebody else, it is nice for them to know who did it, right? It creates this bond between two people. And I think that bond is very important. I think a lot of us are feeling that nowadays, that wanting to have that bond with other people. So I think here it is specifically for gift giving. So thank you for bringing that up. So now the Gemara says, but didn't we learn that if you give a gift, you don't tell the other person? Shenemar, how do we know? From, again, last week's Torah portion, it says, Umoshe lo yada ki karan or panav bidabro ito. When Moshe comes down from Har Sinai, from Mount Sinai, it says that his face is radiant. It is radiating these rays of light. And he doesn't know that he has these rays of light coming off of his face. The idea is that God gave him these rays and he didn't tell him. So how could that be? Right? Lo kashya, says the Gemara. This is not a contradiction. Ha benilta de avida le'agluye. When we're talking about something that will eventually become revealed, le'igluye, will be revealed, then you do not have to tell the person because they'll find out anyway. Ha'bimilta du lo avda le'agluye, de lo avida le'agluye. But when we're talking about this idea that a person will not know that, you know, if you give a child something and the parent will never know, then you should make sure that the parent knows. Now, the Gemara finishes v'ha shabbat de'avida le'gluye, but hold on, you just said that Shabbat needed to be mentioned, God needed to tell us that he was giving it to us. Why? Because now the Gemara seems to imply we would never have known that it came from God. The Gemara says we wouldn't have known that it came from God. Of course we know that it came from God. So the Gemara concludes, Matan Schara Lo Avid Legluye. We wouldn't have known the reward for Shabbat. We wouldn't have known that reward, that God is going to reward us when we keep the Shabbat. And therefore, God needed to make sure that we realize that the gift that we have received is from God. Now, interestingly, I want to show you a few more ideas. The Gemara in Masechet Chagiga, which we will get to, but probably not for another probably year and a half. The Gemara in Masechet Chagiga talks about the creation of light. When God created the world, it says for the beginning of Genesis, we have the creation of light, or. And the Gemara says that the light that God created on the first day, Adam tzofebo misof ha'olam ve'ad sofo, it was so bright you could have seen the entire world because of that light. Kivan shenistakel HaKadosh Baruch Hu b'dor ha'mabul u'b'dor ha'flaga. Right, but when God looked into the future and realized that the people of the Mabul, meaning the people in the time of Noah, and the people in the time and the people in the time of the Tower of Babel, they were going to be so bad, he realized that this light needed to be hidden. And he says, he realized that the people are going to do terrible things, and this divine light shouldn't be in the world with such evil people. God took it and put it away in his treasure house. So again, our question in the beginning was, we said that Shabbat was put in the safe, in this treasure house, that he was now giving it to Bnei Israel, to Moshe. The question is, what else is up there in the treasure house? What else did God kind of put away for the future? And the answer is here in source number two. The answer is this divine light. That this light that is so powerful, God said, I need to hide it away. And who is it hidden away for? V'yimana mirisha'im oram limi'ah. So God says, I'm going to, you know, take it away from the evil people. So then the Gemara asks, Vilimi ganzo. So who is God saving this light for? Right? Again, God is hiding these treasures. Who is he hiding them for? So the Gemara says, Letzadikim la'atid lavo. Right? This light is hidden for the righteous people in the world to come. Shenemar vayar elokim et ha'or kitov. Right? God saw that this light was good, kitov, ve'im tov ele tzadik, right? And a tzadik, a righteous person, is called tov, right? So therefore, the light becomes only for the righteous people. Shenemar imru tzadik kitov. We see that the tzadik, the righteous person, is tov, is good. Kivan shira'a or sheganzo le tzadikim samach. And when God realized that he was saving this light for the righteous people, he became happy. Shenemar or tzadikim yismach. The light of the righteous will make God happy. And this is what we usually say, especially in the High Holy Days. We also say it every Friday night in the prayer service in Kabbalat Shabbat. Or Zarua Latzadik. V'yishrelev simcha, right? God put away this or, this beautiful divine light for the tzaddik, for the righteous person. Interestingly, what do we, you know, so what's, first of all, I think the question is, what's the connection between this light and Shabbat, right? Both of them are hidden away. And the Gemara I'll bring you the Gemara in a second, but first, the Midrash says, Kivan she'shak'ach hama b'lil, the Midrash is going to describe what happened on that first day when Adam and Eve were created. Again, it was a Friday. What happened on that day? So the Midrash, I'm sorry, I don't have English for this, but the Midrash describes what happened. It says, as the sun was about to set on Friday, Bilel Shabbat, on Friday, coming to Friday night, but Friday afternoon, Bikesh HaKadosh Baruch Hu lignoz et ha'ora, meaning that divine light was still around on Friday. And as the sun was setting, God wanted to take that light and put it away for the tzaddikim, as we mentioned. V'chalak kvod l'shabbat, but God gave honor to the Shabbat and kept that divine light out for all of Shabbat. Hadehu dichtiv, and that's why it says, Vayivarech Elokim et yom hashvi'i, vayikadesh oto. This is the beginning of the second chapter of Genesis, of Breshit, and this is actually what we say Friday night in Kiddush, that God blessed the seventh day and sanctified it, vayikadesh oto. And there are many opinions on what that means, that God blessed it and sanctified it. And one of them I brought here is Bircho Be'ora. God blessed the Shabbat with light, with this light that we were talking about, this divine light. Rabbi Levi b'shem Rabbi Zera Amar, Lamid Vav Sha'ot Shimsha Oto Ha'ora. Right, we talked about this divine light being hidden away, but when was it hidden? The Midrash here says that the light was actually in this earth, or with us with Adam and Chava, with Adam and Eve, for 36 hours. When? Shnei Masar Shel Erev Shabbat. So the 12 days of the 12 hours of daylight on Friday, again, when Adam and Eve were created, Ushnematar Shalel Shabbat, and that light was still around Friday night, meaning Shabbat, the beginning of Shabbat, and 12 hours Shel Shabbat, and then the 12 hours of the daytime of Shabbat. Just for those of you who are curious, the Midrash continues and describes what it was like as Shabbat was finishing and the light was going away, and Adam is panicking because it's starting to get dark and he's never seen darkness before. And at the end of Shabbat is when God, I would say, reveals to Adam and Chava how to create fire. And again, this brings us back to our shiur when we talked about Havdalah, the service that we do at the end of the Shabbat, where we basically celebrate the creation of fire. So that's just an aside. But what I wanted to show you is, again, we mentioned that this divine light was there on the first Shabbat. And this is just a little bit of a refresher for us, those of you who did Masechet Brachot. So in Masechet Brachot, we had a list of things that were a 60th, right? There are five things that are a 60th. A shishit or shishim, echad mishishim, and we mentioned fire and honey and Shabbat and Shena, sleep and dreams. And the Gemara mentioned that, what does that mean? Shabbat, echad mishishim le'olam haba. Right? Shabbat is 1/60th of olam haba. Right? We talk about Shabbat as being me'ein olam haba. Shabbat gives us this feeling, or I would say maybe even like a window into what the world to come will be like. Again, the Gemara says it's 1/60th, so it's really just a fraction. But here we have the connection between Shabbat and the world to come. Now, if you remember, we mentioned this light that was created at the beginning of creation was hidden with Shabbat, and it's going to be revealed on in the world to come, in Olam Haba. But we have this, I would say, almost a bridge And that bridge is Shabbat. And I think that this is a beautiful idea that, especially as we read in last week's portion, this, the concept of Shabbat again, that Shabbat is our kind of time to connect to the, I would say maybe even otherworldly, to get us a, give us a feeling of what the next world will feel like. And I brought for you two more sources. One is the Bnei Yisachar, when he talks about Kislev. And this would be a great shiur. You can, we'll try to remember it when we get to Hanukkah time. But he says that we actually light, if you count, we not counting the shamash, but we actually light 36 candles on Hanukkah, meaning eight, right? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 candles. If you add them all up, I did the math, it's 36. So we light 36 candles. Now 36, he says, on one hand, he says, is the times it says or and me'orot in the Torah, but it's also, if you remember from the source above, 36 is supposed to remind you, and here it says, that there was harimizat or haganuz. Right, these 36 candles of Hanukkah are meant to remind us of that the hidden light or haganuz. Just realize this is a Kabbalistic concept based on what we've just been talking about. This light that was put away and saved for the next world, and he says that the 36 candles that we light on Hanukkah are a parallel or a hint to the 36 hours that divine light was here in this world. So again, another parallel between light and candles and this secret divine light. And I just want to end with this idea also, which I love, is from this week's Parsha, from this week's Torah portion, Vayakel. God tells Moshe to gather the entire nation, and he's going to teach them something. The Yalkut Shimoni, the Midrash says, Rabotinu Balei Agada Omrim, Mitzchilat HaTorah Ve'ad Sofa, En Ba Parsha Shenemar Berosha Vayakel. Right, this is very unique that our Parsha, our Torah portion, starts with this word Vayakel, to gather. And why is it so unique here? Because it's coming to teach, right, Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Aseh Lecha Kihilot Gdolot. Quite ironic in a time where we actually do have to be separate. But this parsha talks about gathering the nation, and you have to make big groups of people, kihilot gdolot. And what are you supposed to do in these big groups of people? Vidrosh lifnehem berabim, and you should teach them in front of all the people how hilchot Shabbat. They have to learn the laws of Shabbat. Kedei sheyilmedu mimcha dorot habaim, so that the future generations will learn from you, Moshe, lehakil kihilot b'chol Shabbat b'Shabbat, because you have to realize that you need to gather all the people on Shabbat, every Shabbat, v'lichnos b'batei midrashot, and you should go to the study halls on Shabbat, l'lamod v'leharot l'Yisrael divrei Torah. You have to teach the nation on Shabbat. And what do you teach them? Divrei Torah, Isur Veheter, right, the laws, Kedei Sheyehe Shmi HaGadol Mitkalet Ben Bni, right, so that the name of God will be glorified, will be mentioned, will be sanctified among the nation. And I think this is a beautiful concept. The concept is that there's something very special about learning Torah on Shabbat. And the question is what is that connection? And the Midrash here is saying that divine light, I think we can now kind of put it all together. We said that the divine light was put away for the next world. However, we said that Shabbat kind of gives us that hint of what that light was like. And take it a step further, where is that light? Says the Midrash, the light, that divine light that we are talking about, that's found in the Torah. And when we study Torah, that is a way for us to reveal that divine light. And therefore, there's a special, I would say, reward or special treat to actually studying Torah on Shabbat, because we're putting all of these concepts together. The sanctity of Shabbat, the idea of learning Torah, where we're able to reveal that divine light. And I thought it's just a beautiful idea, you know, especially in difficult times, to really find that those moments of divine light. Again, whether it is in Torah study, whether it is in keeping the Shabbat, whether it's in, again, being together, that creates that feeling of the divine. And I think that that's something that our Gemara is alluding to when we talked about the gift that is Shabbat. So with that, I thank you very much for being a part of this learning, and may we, first of all, stay healthy. Be'ezrat Hashem, with the help of God, we should stay healthy. We should continue with our learning. We should do it. I'm very blessed to be able to have this community of online learners, and may we strengthen each other, even if it's not personally seeing one another, but it could be virtually as well. So with that, I wish you a Shavua Tov, a good week, and a Shabbat Shalom. Looking forward to learning with you next week.